Salam sejahtera, anda bersama saya Rizal Zulkapti dan ini Awani Global. Pada Oktober tahun lepas, seorang guru di Perancis, Samuel Paty, telah dibunuh oleh seorang penganut agama Islam berketurunan Chechen. Serangan ini meningkatkan kemarahan dalam masyarakat di Perancis dan pemimpin Islam di negara itu mengecam pembunuhan itu. Namun, institusi dan komuniti Islam di Perancis didakwa masih diletakkan di bawah tekanan yang memuncak dan juga pemantauan. Presiden Perancis Emmanuel Macron meletakkan Islam dan juga umat Islam di tengah insiden tersebut dan menyifatkannya sebagai satu serangan biasa pengganas Islam dan menyifatkan pembunuhan berkenaan sebagai satu ancaman kepada kebebasan bersuara di Perancis. Dan juga Macron turut mengeluarkan kenyataan yang Islam adalah sebuah agama yang secara globalnya berada dalam krisis dan menggesa reformasi dilakukan ke atas Islam. Ini juga menimbulkan kemarahan pemimpin umat Islam di serata dunia dan ada juga negara yang mengambil tindakan memboikot produk keluaran Perancis di negara mereka. Dan kita ingin membincangkan laporan tahunan terkini European Islamophobia Report 2020 yang akan diterbitkan pada Mei 2021 bersama editor bersama Enes Bayrakli dari Turki. Enes juga adalah pengarah pengajian Eropah di SETA Institute untuk Kajian Politik, Ekonomi dan Sosial di Turki. Izinkan saya meneruskan perbincangan dalam bahasa Inggeris. Enes, thank you for joining us. Enes, we're currently undergoing a social change brought forth by COVID-19. And this pandemic has also highlighted the xenophobic nature of some communities around the world. Tell us, how has the Islamophobia perhaps changed during the pandemic?
It didn't change much. However, some circles in the West, especially in Europe, has also used COVID to attack Muslim communities, to accuse them and made them responsible for the spread of the coronavirus. And of course, this doesn't really reflect the reality. No ethnicity or religious group is responsible for the COVID, as we know. It's a global pandemic. However, they even use this to attack and marginalize Muslims in the West.
Tell us about the incidents that happened in 2020 that came about because of this perhaps misunderstanding of COVID-19 and also Islamophobia.
There were some criticism towards Muslims, like in Germany or in Austria, especially that the Muslims whose origins are from the Balkan countries, who went to holiday for their home countries for some summer holidays, and then when they return, they were accused for the spread of the coronavirus. But we know that millions of people are traveling in Europe, all around Europe, for business purposes or for holiday purposes. Of course, this is a very racist and xenophobic attitude towards Muslims. But the Islamophobes, they don't need any. They use every opportunity to marginalize, securitize, or demonize the Muslims. This is just another example.
And I want to perhaps bring your attention to Dr. Ugur Sahin and also Dr. Ozlem Tureci. These two individuals developed the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID vaccines. They were Turkish and Iranian immigrants. Could this perhaps help the situation a bit in terms of understanding what really happened?
These two persons, they are being represented as the good example of integration into the German society. The Muslims, especially Turks, they migrated to Germany from the 1960s as guest workers. Of course, then afterwards they have they stayed there, and then they became some of them, half of them actually, became citizens of country. But there was an endless discussion about the integration of the Turkish diaspora, Turkish community in Germany. Although now there are the Turks there, they are living in the fourth generation, and they are already integrated into society. They raised there, they were born there, they pay taxes, they are citizens, they are going to school. Some of them graduate of high school, universities, some of them are good professionals, established people in academia, in as we see in the scientific also area. However, still, it is, I mean, this is, I mean, the some circles in Germany are claiming that the Turkish diaspora is not integrated into Germany. However, we see with the Uğur Şahin that the lots of people are doing their, their job. I mean, they are already integrated. However, they are being represented as this, unique examples of this integration, and the rest of the society is not integrated. And we had another example of Mesut Özil. He was a international player at the German national team. He was so successful. I mean, he was an international player. I mean, and then he moved to UK. However, because of the racist remarks and the accusations against him, he had to drop from the German national team. This shows us that there is a problem with this idea of integration. What is really asked from the Turkish community, or generally put to, from foreigners and Muslims in Germany or in continental Europe, we can generalize, it's the assimilation of the into the majority society. And this assimilation requires that you drop your own culture, your religious, and you became non-visible in the majority society. Of course, this is something against the human rights, and that's why there is this tension.
Tell us about the European Islamophobia report that was started about 5 years ago. What did you get in 2019, and what can we hope to see in 2020 from the report, the latest version of the report? You mentioned structural and institutional racism and also bigotry. But tell us more about that. Has that perhaps changed? Because we see in the US there's the Black Lives Matter movement. Did that also perhaps gain traction in Europe?
European Islamophobia report, we started, it's an annual report. We started this 2015, and since 2015, we published this report every year. And it covers almost all Europe. There are 32 countries now covered in the report, and each country reports are written by experts or civil society activists living in those countries. And with this report, we aim to raise awareness among European public, but also European decision makers, politicians, because this problem have been neglected and for a quite long time. There were, discussions that, the most of the politicians, they have denied that there was a problem with Islamophobia. And with this report, we have shown that it's a widespread problem in almost all of Europe, in the West Europe, but also in the Eastern Europe, where you don't have any, meaningful Muslim minority living there. I mean, it's almost... Muslims are non-existent in Poland, let's say, or in Czech Republic. However, even in those countries, you have a very strong anti-Muslim racism, especially if you look at the language of the media and the politicians. So the report is accessible online, and it has contributed to raise the awareness of this problem. However, it has been also attacked by the far-right circles and the far-right politicians in Europe. As unfortunately, also the co-editor of this report, a colleague of mine, we are two editors, me and Farid Hafiz. He is living in Austria. He's an Austrian citizen. He has been targeted by the Austrian state because of his criticism towards Austria. His house has been was raided by the anti-terror police teams. And he was accused of, ridiculous crimes without any base, and this shows us that it's even much, much deeper. I mean, this problem goes, but we just start to scratch the surface of the problem. 2020, Unfortunately, with each year, we see a deterioration of the situation of the Muslims in Europe. Unfortunately, there are not much positive signs. There are some positive developments, but these are only very few, and it doesn't, you know, affect the whole discussion and rhetoric about Muslims. So 2020, we have seen two states, France and Austria, has become the hub and the hotspots of the Islamophobia. Especially in France, we've seen the French state targeted the Muslim civil society, Muslim NGOs, and there were talks about political Islam, especially in Austria also, the current Prime Minister of Austria, Chancellor Sebastian Kurz, he wants to criminalize political Islam. Whatever that may be, how it is defined is anyone's guess. I mean, political Islam can be defined in any way. Of course, there is no discussion about Christian, political Christianity, right? There are Christian Democrat parties all around Europe. And if the Christians can use Christianity as a base for a political activity or activism, why not Muslims? But this has been criminalized in Austria nowadays, and there is this discussion about criminalization or banning of political Islam. And by using these, I mean, the Muslim civil society has been targeted. Of course, this is a very serious, development, especially the France. What is happening in France and in Austria is very worrying development for the future of the European democracies.
Bertemu kembali, kita membincangkan berkenaan dengan laporan Islamofobia yang diterbitkan oleh SETA bersama dengan Anas Bairakli, editor bersama laporan tersebut. Anas, you mentioned about the perhaps discrimination against Muslim political parties in Austria, but this is Europe. Europe has the European Convention on Human Rights, and Article 9 specifically says that it guarantees the freedom to practice one's religion and belief. So why is there this disconnect between the ECHR and also what's happening on the ground that guarantees the ability for one to practice their beliefs and their religious beliefs?
Let me correct one small issue. There are no political parties in Austria, Muslim political parties. It's political activism that I am talking about. Of course, there are these principles of human rights and religious freedom. But if those principles are translated into the social life, and in the nation states laws, it's another problem, another question. So these are general principles. But we see that increasingly the religious freedoms of Muslims are limited by using the discussions around secularism and laïcité in France. For instance, it is claimed that the presence of the hijab and the headscarf is against the principle of laïcité and secularism. And by using these, the headscarf is banned at the French universities. And now there is also this new law, and up until the age of the 18, it is also forbidden, I mean, to wear the hijab at the state institutions and the universities and schools. So you see that there are clash of principles and how these principles are interpreted. And so it's a constant battle. So these are not given. These freedoms are not given. We see that the civil rights, the battle around civil rights, and especially in the U.S., it's a long process. If you change the law, it doesn't mean that you solve the problem. You know, it's that's why we are talking about structural racism. In the United States, there is this constant battle and around, I mean, the civil rights movement since the 1960s, and it has been 50, 60 years now. However, still we see that the people with the black skin are targeted and murdered on the street by the police in the in the United States. We did even have a you know, American president with a, you know, with a colored skin, right? But this didn't change the problem on the ground. So this is a much bigger problem. And so the fact that the European Convention on Human Rights has a principle on religious freedom doesn't mean that you don't have any problem. On the contrary, with the increasing secularization of Muslims and the association of Islam with the terrorism after 9/11, especially, we see that by using these and instrumentalizing the war on terror, the religious rights of Muslims have been limited all around Europe.
So what measures can your report recommend to the policymakers in Europe? I know your report is also written by different individuals situated in these different countries. So they know the nuances, they understand how policymakers in different countries could and would react to the report. What recommendations do you have for Europe as a whole and perhaps some key countries in Europe?
Look, first and foremost, the problem has to be acknowledged. So there are still, I mean, the circles in Europe, and this is not a minority, the overwhelming majority of the European politicians, they do not recognize the problem of Islamophobia. They deny that there is a problem of Islamophobia. Most of them are saying that Islamophobia, the term itself, is just a tool to silence the criticism of Islam. And this is being used by the political and the by Islamists. However, I have to say this, Islamophobia means anti-Muslim racism, but we don't say that every criticism of Muslims and the religion of Islam is Islamophobic. Muslims and Islam can be criticized, and Muslims are criticizing themselves already. If you look at the Muslim world, there is a huge and very harsh discussions, criticism about Muslims, the social problems of Muslims. This is very normal. However, the issue at stake here is how do you do this criticism? If you essentialize and if you generalize all Muslims and if you make racist remarks, then this is the problem. So our first recommendation that Islamophobia has to be acknowledged as a problem, and it has to be this problem has to be articulated by the politicians, by the political by the decision makers, and it has to be taken into as a separate hate crime category into national records, so that we can see and we can have a clear picture how much and how many Islamophobic crimes have been committed in those national countries. And secondly, there has to be a change of rhetoric about Muslims by politicians. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we see that the Muslims are associated with terrorism all the time. And all these discussions and the marginalization of Muslims, of course, leads to violence on the street. So these are two big recommendations. Of course, there are others, many, that can be done. And of course, European Union has to play a big role here. But up until now, we've seen that the European Union, although there were some small steps, still very silent about Islamophobia. And the European Parliament has to take a decision about Islamophobia, as it has done on anti-Semitism, also anti-Roma and anti-Gypsyism. So it has to also take a decision against Islamophobia. But up until now, we've seen that these steps have not been taken.
And I think I want to touch upon what you said earlier about leaders and being responsible to curb and to end Islamophobia. President, Emmanuel Macron, immediately after the attack on Samuel Paty, said that Islam globally is in crisis and calls for the reform of Islam globally. Tell us about that and how leaders and their words And what it means to people on the street looking for excuse to launch Islamophobic attacks against communities or individuals in their particular countries. Do you think these leaders should be more responsible with their words and actions?
Look, I mean, there is a crisis in the Muslim world. You know, this is, everybody knows about this, right? And the Muslims know about themselves. I mean, they know, they are aware of this problem. If Macron means that there is these problems in the Muslim world, of course we know about this. But if he means that there are theological problems in the Islam and this has to be, Islam has to be reformed, it is not of his business, right? Because Macron is a, you know, France is a secular state, and the secular states, they don't interfere with the religious affairs of other religious communities. So can Macron call for a reform of Judaism or Buddhism or Christianity? It's not his business. Mm-hmm. Of course, Muslims are discussing this, the theologians among themselves, and it's their business. They will discuss this, and there are different sects in the Muslim world, and Muslim, you know, Islam is not, you know, there are different ways in Islam, and the Muslims are aware of this. But if nation states aims to, you know, engineer a European Islam or a French Islam, that's the, where the problem starts. Of course, this is of course against the principle of laïcité and secularism, because this is, you know, the separation of church and the state. And it means, of course, state does not also interfere with the church affairs. And here we see that Macron wants to reform Islam according to his own taste. Of course, this is not acceptable. And on the other hand, this shows also us that the problem of Islamophobia, very much a problem of the elites. So here we do not talk about misunderstandings of common people on the street about Islam in Europe. Of course, there are misunderstandings and stereotypes about Muslims. And this is normal, actually. I mean, also Muslims or other religious communities have different stereotypes and misunderstandings about each other. But if this translates into politics, into policies of the state, then that where the problem starts. And if, you know, there is an a campaign of hatred and negative rhetoric about a religious community, you know, carried out by elites, media elites, intellectuals, academics, or politicians, this is where the problem starts. And this is what actually is happening in Europe. The elites are mostly responsible for the Islamophobic wave that we are seeing in Europe. The elites of political elites and the academia and the intellectuals, they are the runners, forerunners, or they are the leading. They are leading the Islamophobia industry in Europe.
Briefly, before we end the interview, Anas, tell us about the other key findings that you'll be published in the 2020 report. What are some of the most worrying findings that you could tell us?
The most worrying development that we see the signs of a wave of Islamophobic terror attacks against Muslims. So we see signs of very radicalization, strong radicalization against Muslims, violent rhetoric, which translates into terror attacks against Muslims. Unfortunately, there are signs that the far-right radicalism is organizing itself, and there are different networks in Europe, not only in Europe, but it is also connected to other far-right circles all around around the globe, like we have seen with the Tarrant. Although he was living in the New Zealand, he was connected to far-right circles in Europe. And through this ideology, he is radicalized to the point that he attacked and killed Muslims in a mosque and innocent people, right? So we see that a terror wave, Islamophobic terror wave, is about to hit Europe, unfortunately. And Muslim institutions, mosques, schools, NGOs, they are under threat and they have to be protected. And of course, especially European security institutions, police, intelligence services has to tackle this problem very seriously. I mean, especially they have to observe and monitor far-right radical groups, terror groups, terror organizations, but also there are many lone wolves And they have to be put under surveillance, and there has to be also this state has to develop countering violent radicalism, extremism programs, anti-radicalization programs, de-radicalization programs against far right groups in order to tackle this problem. But as far as we see, when it comes to de-radicalization programs, it's all about Muslims. Mm-hmm. There are Muslims who are radicalized, and this has to be tackled with. I mean, I don't discuss this point. However, there are also far right and far left even circles who are radicalized enough and who are ready to carry out terror attacks. And we've seen that there are increasing terror attacks against Muslims, like it happened in Hanau in Germany last year. There were some other terror attacks in France. There were some in the UK, Anders Breivik, etc.
Okay, thank you very much, Anas Bayrakli. And the report will come out in May?
We are planning to publish it soon, so it may take another 1 month. Because of COVID issue, we run into some troubles, but we will publish it as soon as possible.
Okay, itu tadi Anas Bayrakli dari Turki membincangkan berkenaan dengan laporan tahunan terkini European Islamophobia Report 2020 yang akan diterbitkan pada sekitar Mei ataupun Jun 2021. Anas adalah juga pengarah pengajian Eropah di SETA Institute untuk Kajian Politik, Ekonomi dan juga Sosial di Turki. Terima kasih kerana bersama saya Riza Zulkapli di Awani Global. Teruskan bersama kami untuk perbincangan dalam dan juga luar negara. Salam hormat.